This is Small Business Conversations with Akona Machoba, unlocking essential advice, opinions, and key issues that affect South Africa's small business community.
Welcome to yet another edition of the Small Business Conversations podcast, MoneyWeb's weekly SME show highlighting critical issues affecting South Africa's small business environment. Now, in May, the Federated Hospitality Association of South Africa, better known as FedHASA, launched a non-profit business incubator program at the Travel Indaba, which was held in Durban this year. Now, you would remember that the COVID-19 pandemic dealt a devastating blow to businesses, especially those in the tourism sector, and looking to in part address the aftershocks of the pandemic, FedHASA has said that it wants the program to focus on supporting the value chain of the South African hospitality sector. So today I am joined by Rosemary Anderson, the national chair of the association, to tell us more about what this means. Welcome to the show, Rosemary.
Thank you so much. Great to be here.
Awesome. Great to have you. So can you tell us more about the incubator program? FedHASA says it wants to support the hospitality industry, that value chain over there. What does that support look like?
Okay, so FedHASA, we've partnered with Sigma International. They're an award-winning level one BE company, and they've done a tremendous amount very successfully in business incubation. So we thought they would be the best people to partner with because they've really been able to facilitate the change that we actually need. So as you know, all companies from 1st of May 2015, all companies have to, if they are wanting to be accredited, they've got to spend in the tourism sector 0.5% of their net profit after tax on enterprise development and 3% of supplier development. So unfortunately, a lot of the times, it's just a matter of ticking a box. They'll maybe give the amount of money to one company. Whereas we really want to facilitate proper change in our industry where we can really advance supply networks and enterprise development within the tourism and hospitality chain. So I'm going to give you an example because I think that that maybe would mean far more. So a good example was what could be theirs, and this is a real life example. There's a large listed hotel group in South Africa, and they wanted to try to help. They already had a company who supplied lawn services, gardening services to a couple of the hotels. They wanted to grow them because they were really very good, but they didn't have the necessary equipment. They didn't have enough buckies. They didn't have enough lawnmowers or large lawnmowers, but their attitude was great. They really were very hardworking, and they wanted to grow them so they could actually service more of their hotels in one of the particular provinces. So what they did is they actually got Sigma International to partner with this company to assist them. They bought the necessary lawnmowers. They bought the necessary buckies to actually help this company grow. This company has now grown to a point where not only do they service this large listed company very successfully, but they're also able to provide garden service to many other corporates too. So the whole idea is to help people who are already helping themselves, just giving them that extra. Another would be an example of another listed hotel group who wanted to encourage a BE lady to supply coffee services. She already was doing it, but it wasn't, she needed more assistance. They've done that now. And now she's supplying coffee services to all of their hotels in the country. So the whole idea is to help people who are already helping themselves and not just tick a box and give money to entities, but actually through Sigma, actually develop these people. So for example, would be you might have a really small company who doesn't have a website, who's not tax compliant, who doesn't know how to go about marketing themselves. Sigma would come in there with our members spend of their 3% of their supply development and their 0.5% of their enterprise spend and actually help these companies to just get over that initial help, which a lot of people just never end up having, to actually better themselves and to be really in the industry. So that's basically in a very practical way as to what we're doing. So we don't want companies just to tick a box, put the money into a company which might not make any difference. We really want this money to make a difference in the very deep supply chain that there is in our industry.
Rosemary, thank you so much for that explanation. I think it really paints the picture of what you're trying to do. I'm just interested in clarifying in the support that FedHASA is giving with in partnership with its partners. Are we focusing just on businesses that are already part of the network, like the example you used with the hotel group, or are we open to new entrants, people that maybe aren't exposed to the existing network that FedHasa has established? Can you explain how that dynamic is going to operate?
No, we're totally open to everyone. So a good example would be this large listed company. They could say, we really would like to develop a company. We don't have a company at the moment, but we would like to develop a relationship with a PE company who could supply draping and flowers and decor for weddings or for functions. And for example, that company might not have them. Then Sigma will actually source this company. They'll find a company, and they might find a company that, once again, like with the lawnmower company, they didn't have enough facilities. They would then look at what they could actually do to grow the company where it could actually meet the needs of the company, of the corporate, of the hotel, that group that I'm talking about. So it's basically, it's almost like a matchmaker, and it's a matchmaker to the benefit of the industry, to the benefit of the professionalization of the industry, and to actually really growing small businesses that all they needed was that little bit of extra help just to get them into a different level of operations.
Mm. And the capital that will be dedicated to this program, you mentioned some percentages there and how you might be calculating, but can you give us a rough, maybe ballpark number of how much the group or the association is looking to possibly spend on this initiative and what the kind of support as well that's going to be pitted out in terms of the skills that the people that are part of this can expect to gain?
Okay, so in 2015, the new codes became effective. And what that means, there are different codes and different percentages for different industries. For our tourism sector, which hospitality also falls under, enterprise, we have to spend 0.5% of our net profit after tax. And the development services is 3%. So we're still using the example of this one listed company. They would have to spend those percentages in order for them to get the required number of points in BEE on the BE level. So if they were a multi, if they were a very large company and the turnover was in excess of $1 billion, you could just work out the percentages once you knew what their net profit after tax was. And so all companies have got to do this if they want to be BE compliant. So it's billions. We're talking about huge amounts of money, which will be invested and is invested in the industry. And it's not like it already was there, but the point is we're trying to make it actually make a difference on the ground. So as a hospitality business, your day job is not to try to, you don't have the expertise to know how to grow other businesses or to try to source different industries to actually help you provide services for your company. So that's why you use an entity like Sigma International. That's why we've partnered with them, because that's what they're experts at. They actually find, they matchmake. So as an industry, you would like to get more help in this particular line, they will then matchmake and they will try and find a company that actually could help you, that they'll be their service provider. And at the same time, because they're small, you would actually help them develop to be the entity, the professional entity that you actually need.
Now, Rosemary, I mentioned earlier that the pandemic was really tough for the hospitality industry, and the hospitality industry is quite wide ranging. It includes restaurants, B&Bs, theme parks and travel agencies, if I'm correct. How is this industry recovering now? Can you give us a sense of where we are at and how far we are to go to get to those pre-pandemic levels? Have we reached those pandemics? Can you just give us a quick analysis of where we're at?
So many companies during the pandemic, unfortunately, had to take out loans in order just for them to survive. So many of them, unfortunately, are servicing a lot of loans, which beforehand they didn't have was pre-pandemic. A lot of the numbers have come look right. Like if you look at occupancies for a lot of hotels, they're actually back to pre-COVID levels. The big problem, O'Connor, is that our input costs are so much higher. So the diesel costs are like almost making it prohibitive for some businesses to operate. Not only the diesel running costs, but also the capital costs that people have to incur with regards to getting generators or inverters or batteries or solar. So unfortunately, these were costs which we didn't have to worry about pre-COVID, which now we really, really have to worry about. And then there are also some areas in southern KZN is particularly bad, where the local municipalities are not able to supply a consistent supply of water. So people are having to actually bring in water, which is also like prohibitively very expensive too. So unfortunately, our industry is facing a lot more challenges than it did And remember, so we're coming off the back of an industry which was really, really decimated and people having to take out loans. And now we've got these extra things to have to worry about. On top of that, also our international market has not returned to pre-COVID levels, unfortunately, which is a great pity because a lot of our African sister countries have actually exceeded it, okay? So there are lots of challenges that we're still facing, Akona.
And I imagine that impact is much worse for the SMEs in the sector. What is the picture looking like there? I imagine it's much worse.
It is. Unfortunately, that's always what happens. And interestingly, from an accommodation point of view, the sector which has benefited the most from the last 2 years of post-COVID is the 4 and 5 star hotels, the smaller hotels, the smaller hospitality, the smaller restaurants, the smaller B&Bs, guest houses. They're the ones that actually haven't bounced back. It seems like the market for the top end is there and people are spending money there. But the middle to lower, the people are not spending it. It also could just relate to the fact that people who are financially struggling, the last thing they'll do now is spend money on hospitality. So I think that's where it equates, yes.
During the pandemic, there was a lot of talk around locals traveling and pushing local travel. And we just came out now, I think, in some parts of the country out of the school holiday season. And I'm just wondering if you have had a sense of how that has impacted the industry, if there's been a positive foot traffic in those smaller businesses. What's the picture looking like with that?
Yeah, once again, it's exactly the same picture. So the 5-star hotels, the more expensive restaurants, they're all doing really well. And unfortunately, the 3 and lower star, they're not doing as well. You'll also find that some centres, for example, Sandton has not got back to where it was. But Cape Town is absolutely, the numbers that they're producing are really, really good. And they've still got quite a lot of international tourists there at the moment. This time of the year, you normally don't have them there. So Cape Town, I think of all the provinces or the cities, should I say, and the Cape in general is doing much better than the other provinces.
And maybe this might be a positive development. You can give your thoughts on it. But not too long ago, the Department of Tourism announced that tour operators awaiting their license renewals would no longer be penalized for operating without their licenses. And there's a process that's been developed now to avoid that. How does a development like this ease pressure off of the larger tourism industry, especially given that, if I understand what you've said correctly, that international tourism is still popular in some places, and we know that our theme parks tend to get a lot of attention. So how does that development then support or ease pressure off of the industry?
Yes, this is a wonderful development, and we can actually say thank you to Minister Diddle because she facilitated this. If I can just put a word in there, we are so grateful to have Minister Diddle because she is doing things that other people have spoken about for so long, but she is actually doing them. She's really an action minister, so the industry is totally behind her. In the short few months that she's been our minister, we've seen a tremendous number of changes, and she's facilitating the change that we actually need to do what we need, what we do best, and that's create jobs. And this is a perfect example. With people not being able to get their licenses, they weren't able to conduct their businesses as tour operators. It was just crazy. On one hand, we're talking about creating jobs, and on the other hand, just through pure bureaucracy, we're not able to these people to be able to conduct their businesses and employ people. So this definitely is a very positive development, and I hope the transport departments make sure that all of our law enforcement people definitely adhere to this new rule, that they're not allowed to take cars and actually take people. I mean, we've had incidences where overseas tourists have been on a bus or a large vehicle, and they've literally been pulled over and told to get out, you know, that the guy doesn't have a license and that's it. I mean, they've got no understanding of how damaging this is to tourism. So we're very, very happy with what Minister Little has done.
And just on that note, what other kinks then, Rosemary, are there that still need to be ironed out to better position the industry to reach those heights that we know it can?
Connor, one of the big issues is the visa system. So many, many countries, even some of our bordering sister countries, have got proper e-visas. And an e-visa system is where you can apply for a visa and it's done. In a couple of days, you'll get the visa because it's not done manually through humans in the back. At the moment, we say we've got an e-visa system, but really it is just an online system and it takes quite a long time. Sometimes people don't even hear back. I'll give examples which will make a difference. If you're Chinese and you want to visit South Africa, you've got to do it through our supposed e-visa system, and it isn't an e-visa system. It could take months before you actually hear back and actually get a positive response. If you apply to Australia to get a visa to visit Australia as a Chinese person, it literally will take you a few days, and it's just an online process. We need to make it easier for people to visit our country. Our offerings, if you compare us to Australia, so pre-COVID we had about 95,000 Chinese people tourists visiting South Africa. Australia in turn had 1.2 million. And the reason I specifically mentioned Chinese is because they're now the largest international travelers worldwide. It's the biggest market. So why would we possibly not be going after the biggest market out there? Other countries, Europe, bend over backwards to actually attract that market because it's now become a very lucrative market and there are so many of them traveling. But we're actually doing exactly the opposite. And it also doesn't make any sense considering we've got this relationship with BRICS. So no idea what the case is there. The other thing, Akona, that we really could be doing is having a digital nomad visa. So COVID definitely, digital nomads and even grew it even bigger than it was pre-COVID. So basically they're people that live, they come from any country in the world, but they could live anywhere in the world because their jobs are online. So the countries which have really benefited from this, one of them is Mexico. The highest number of digital nomads are actually staying in Mexico at the moment. So they're people who go there, who spend all their money there, don't take up anyone's job, but just create jobs because they're buying petrol, they're taking accommodation, they're eating restaurants, and they're there long term. So countries are giving digital nomad visas out for a year, 18 months, 2 years, 3 years. Some European countries even giving them up to 5 years because they realize the benefit of this type of traveler. They're there long term, they're spending money, they're not taking up jobs, and it's like a long-term tourist. It's just a wonderful, wonderful opportunity. And we're not capitalizing on that. We still don't have a digital nomad visa. And some of our African sister countries have already got them. And we've spoken about it for so long. It's a huge new tourism opportunity that we're just not jumping on. And if you look at Mexico, as I mentioned, which has got the largest number of digital nomad visas, digital nomads in the country, Mexico is not without its problems. I mean, we hear about all of the crime and the drug assassinations and all the rest of it. But they're still attracting them there because obviously the weather's great and it's a lovely environment. We also have our problems, but we could still be attracting people. If you compare us to Mexico, our offerings are so much higher and our problems are less. So we could be doing exactly the same thing. We could be having all of those people. And the more tourists we have, the more jobs we create. And that's our biggest problem in South Africa is joblessness. And hospitality and tourism could break the back of that terrible joblessness figures, those figures we have out there. We could really make a huge dent if we just got our visa system in place.
Quite interested, Rosemary, in what you mentioned about the digital nomad visa. And I'm glad you mentioned the point on the problems that South Africa faces, because we do have a huge infrastructure problem. And I'm wondering, where in the country would tourists be interested in going? What are the hotspots that the industry has earmarked for those tourists? And what is the potential revenues that could come out of this innovation? And where is government with this? I know I'm asking quite a bit, but I'm just trying to get a picture here of where we're at.
Well, Cape Town is already positioning themselves as the place to go for digital nomads. They're already advertising it, they're pushing it. Their tourism, their marketing campaign is excellent. It really is. So they're really going for it. I'm just trying to think of remember all your questions here. So government is not doing anything besides the Western Cape government. None of the other governments, our national governments or otherwise provincial governments besides Western Cape, are doing anything about it.
The other one was on the revenue potential of such an innovation. I'm sorry, I know I overloaded you there.
Well, if you look at the per capita income of the average digital nomad, if you took it as a country, in other words, there's, I think if I recollect, there's 34 million digital nomads in the world at the moment. If you took it as a country because of the income, it would be one of the highest income earning countries per capita income in the world. So it's a crazy market that we could totally be capitalizing on. I don't know if you've heard about even there was a German company recently who they're trying to bring in their CEO, who's they're starting a company in South Africa that obviously can be creating jobs. I think it's 18 months and they still haven't got a visa for the CEO yet. So our whole visa system, whether it's digital nomads, whether it's work visas, our tourists, our Chinese tourists, everything needs a total revamp. And I think government needs to realize that they cannot talk about job creation and at the same time be the biggest stumbling block to job creation in tourism and hospitality. It's just not fair to do that. And the other thing government needs to realize that every single department impacts on tourism and hospitality, whether it's roads, electricity, wastewater, water, transport. We need to have an all-government approach towards tourism and hospitality. And they've got to realize, as a department, are they helping tourism and hospitality? Are they helping job creation? Or are they actually hindering it? And no one should talk about job creation unless they actually analyze their own departments and saying, are we part of the solution or are we part of the problem?
And Rosemary, just before we end off, I'm just interested in the opportunities for entrepreneurship that these things that you've mentioned now have. I mean, South Africa has a huge offering. We have the wildlife, we have beautiful cities, we have rich township experiences, culture that people can tap into. I'm just interested in how you've assessed the entrepreneurship benefit for those that see tourism as a way to grow our economy and grow wealth in this country.
Akana, that's what's so wonderful about tourism and hospitality. Anyone can go into it. You do not need to have any formal qualification, but you could be absolutely great at it and you could make a very good living. That is what's so wonderful about our industry and which government should really capitalize on and invest more money in our industry, because you don't need to build a steel factory. We've already got everything. We've got all those offerings. Our offerings are unmatched. All we need to do is make it easy to come into South Africa, and at the same time, simultaneously, all of those things which are obviously deterrents, like lack of electricity, water, safety, those issues government needs to look at. Just talking specifically about one thing, our Minister of Tourism is looking at gastronomy, where we can really showcase our wonderful foods and our beverages and our drinks in South Africa. And that's something she's very proactively looking at. So, for example, you know, you hear about people going to France and going on a cooking tour and wine tour. South Africa, oh my goodness, if you look at the township tourism, look at our wonderful our brewing of our beer. Some of those recipes go back hundreds of years. They've been passed from person to person. We get wonderful townships experience of being in a tavern, enjoying the local beer, at the same time, enjoying the local food. You could go, we've also got very good, lots of craft breweries. We've got our Mampur, we've got our magnificent wines. There's so many tours and small businesses that could open up if we actually just started marketing that as South Africa as a place to come to actually enjoy all things taste great. And look at how all of those small businesses in townships, in dorpies, in rural areas could capitalize on that.
And that is Rosemary Anderson, the National Chair of FedHasa, speaking to us about the incubator program they recently launched at the Travel Indaba in Durban this May, and also giving us an update on where the hospitality sector is currently, as well as where it is headed, what those kinks need to be that need to be ironed out so that the hospitality sector can register a full recovery from the hardships it has faced in the past. Thank you so much, Rosemary, for your time.
Thank you.
If you enjoyed this podcast, please like and follow Small Business Conversations and don't forget to share our episodes. If you want to contribute to the conversation, you can tweet me at @Machoba_A or you can email us at smepodcast@moneyweb.co.za to share your thoughts and suggestions for future conversations. Until next time, thank you and goodbye.
You've been listening to Small Business Conversations with Akona Machoba. To listen to more MoneyWeb podcasts, go to moneyweb.co.za, the MoneyWeb app, or your favorite podcast platforms. MoneyWeb, your trusted source for business and investment insights.